From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I am running for governor in 2026 to protect our story. Because our story is now one of fiscal responsibility, of social accountability, of modern adaptability. Our story values love over hate, courage over fear, kindness over cruelty.
Will it be J.B. Pritzker 3.0? The governor has announced he will seek a third term. This comes as Pritzker has been rumored to also have his eyes on a White House bid. We'll discuss the governor's decision, and as we head toward the start of a new fiscal year, a new state budget will take effect. We'll take a closer look. All that and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Ben Zielinski with Capital News Illinois. Ben, it's good to have you back on the show with us.
Good to see you, Sean.
So, Ben, Pritzker made several stops. You followed this yesterday. Several stops across Illinois announcing that he's running for another term as governor, a third term. Give us kind of the overview of what the governor had to say. We heard a little bit at the start.
Yeah, it really seems like the governor's theme this campaign, in his third campaign for governor, is focused on protecting his legacy. He said, you know, one of his main goals when he first ran for office in 2018 was to rewrite Illinois' story, to put, you know, some of the negative things of Illinois' past to bed, to have a more positive view of the state. And he thinks he's accomplished that over his two terms as governor. And so he said he's really out to protect that legacy, to continue to make sure that Illinois is viewed positively. And he says he still has more work to do. He didn't get overly specific about it, but he believes that, you know, in this national political climate that we're in, that there's more work that he wants to get done over four more years as governor.
Charlie, a third term, that's pretty rare in Illinois politics.
Yeah, it is. As a matter of fact, there have only been two governors in all our history been elected to three terms. And one of them, obviously, was Jim Thompson, who was first elected in 1976, reelected in 78. And then reelected in 82 and 86. And there was, and so Thompson served 14 years, the most of anybody. And the interesting thing is that his first term was a two-year term. And that's because for most of Illinois' history, the statewide elected officials, the executive branch officials, were elected in the same years as the presidential election. And so the delegates to the Constitutional Convention thought, if we shift the statewide elections off the presidential years to a non-presidential year, voters will pay more attention to who's running for governor because there won't be competition for people's attention by the presidential race. So they made that change, and it was effective. As I say, after Thompson was elected his first term, it was only a two-year term, and it's been 4 years ever since. Interestingly enough, the only governor before Thompson to be elected three terms was a Republican from Decatur named Richard J. Oglesby. And he was elected, well, he was a friend, a close friend of Abraham Lincoln. He first was elected. He took office in January of 1865, and he served until 1869. Then he set out for a term, and he was reelected in 1872. But it was interesting because he cut a deal with the General Assembly, and the Republicans dominated anything back in those days. And he cut a deal with the Republican leadership. If they would support him for the U.S. Senate, he'd run for governor and quit after 10 days, which he did. He served 10 days, then he resigned to go to the U.S. Senate. Then finally, he ran successfully for governor in 1884. And served until January 14 of 1889. So he had three terms, but they were not consecutive. Before anybody asks, no, I was not around here for Oglesby, but I relied for this information on Bob Howard's book, Mostly Good and Incompetent Men, which is History of the Governors of Illinois.
I think when I look back to, say, to January, I had people ask me, you know, do you think Pritzker's going to run again? And I was, yeah, 100%, I think he will. And then I started talking to different folks, these, some are political insiders, some are reporters, other people, and they started to put, in my mind, at least a little doubt that maybe it came down to about 70% likely that he'd run, or even less. Was it a surprise to you? I mean, had you been thinking that Pritzker might decide not to run, still keeping his eye on something bigger, like maybe running for president?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised at all that he decided to run again. He occasionally would sow a little doubt on it, talking about how, well, this is a decision I need to make with my family. I really do love the job, but, 4 more years is, quite a big commitment. So I need to think about it. So I think that occasionally puts some doubt in people's mind. But I'm not at all surprised that he's ultimately decided to run for re-election. He told a group of us reporters in Springfield on Thursday evening that, he thinks now is just not the right time to get out of the fight, that there's a lot of things that are going on in this world, and he enjoys being a part of the political combat, I guess. And I think he sees he has a role in that, and if he has future ambitions for the White House or something, I think he does think that continuing to hold office, continuing to be a visible person, pushing back in material ways that actually do make a difference against the Trump administration, that's probably the most helpful for any political future he has.
Yeah, good points. Charlie, your thoughts on were you kind of on the edge of whether or not he'd try to run for another term?
No, I was not at all in doubt. And I see J.B. Pritzker as certainly the most successful governor of this century in Illinois and somebody who really, really enjoys his job. On the times that I've been at events with him, he's a very affable guy. He's very approachable. And he just kind of radiates this notion that, man, I really like what I'm doing. And so I think the notion, say, as some of the pundits suggested, well, if he wants to run for president, he shouldn't run for governor again. There's all these things that could happen to him as governor that would hurt him as a presidential candidate. They didn't fully appreciate the fact that he really enjoys being governor. He's very proud of what he's accomplished, and he laid out several things that he still wants to work on. Early childhood education, for example. He talked about some pension reforms. He talked about other things at different stops along the way. And so you could tell he's a guy who really likes his job and he doesn't want to give it up.
Now, he will face opposition, so just because he's running doesn't mean he's anointed a third term. But Ben, that's a little unclear who the Republicans will put up against him. There are certainly people in this state that don't like J.B. Pritzker, don't like his policies, let's say. And some of that goes back to COVID. Some of that goes back to some other things that have happened on his watch. But he certainly could be susceptible to defeat if the right candidate ran against him, but we just don't know who that is yet, right? I mean, have we heard more about that?
Yeah, we really don't know what this Republican field is going to look like. And the big calculation that every Republican candidate is making is it worth running for a seat that you more than likely will not win? Because that would force a lot of current incumbent lawmakers to give up a seat they currently hold and would probably continue to hold and win re-election too. But if they, give up that seat, Darren LaHood's a good example. He's somebody who's been talked about as a potentially pretty viable candidate for governor, somebody who could actually maybe give J.B. Pritzker a bit of a run for his money here. But the problem is, if he decides to run for governor, he gives up his safe seat in Congress, and there's no risk of Darren LaHood losing his seat in Congress anytime soon. So that's the calculation that's being made here, is that do Republicans want to take on this challenge that would be a very hard challenge, because Pritzker can throw unlimited money into this race. He is a pretty popular governor despite the people who don't like him. And Republican campaigns over the last several election cycles have just not been organized and not very competitive. And I think that's really just keeping a lot of potential candidates away. They'd rather stay with whatever they're at rather than risk a long campaign season to end up losing at the end.
Yeah, Charlie, you think, I know that the Republicans tend to have the best success when a more moderate candidate can run statewide, but moderate candidates have had a hard time even getting out of primaries recently here, even in the state of Illinois. So not necessarily a guarantee that if a moderate decided to put their hat in the ring that they would come out a winner.
No, I see that as a problem for the Republican Party in Illinois statewide, in the sense that, as you said, Illinois is not a, what would you say, a real conservative state, particularly up in the Chicago area. You look at how the suburbs have changed from being solidly Republican to basically solidly Democrat. Part of it is ethnic changes, the growth of the Hispanic population, the fact that a lot of the South Side and West Side Black communities have moved out into the suburbs, and districts that were once solidly Republican, as I say, they're now solidly Democrat. Plus, you have the problem that the Republican Party on a national level has shifted very much, and it's become very much a party of Donald Trump. And if you want to win in the primary, you have to kind of be a Trump acolyte. And that, for success in the general, is not very, very likely. Maybe a bigger problem is the Republicans don't have any money. And I say that in the sense that their previous number one donor, Ken Griffin, has moved to Florida along with his money. Bruce Rauner, the last Republican governor who Pritzker handily defeated, he also moved to Florida. And so the really big money folks aren't here in Illinois anymore. They're focusing elsewhere. And if I'm a big Republican contributor and I'm concerned about having my dollars be most effective, I'm not going to blow them on a losing cause in Illinois when there are more competitive races for the control of the Senate, the U.S. Senate, for example, or the U.S. House of Representatives. My money would be better spent on those kind of races rather than on a super long shot that just maybe the stars will align and a Republican candidate can actually beat J.B. Pritzker with his basically unlimited ability to fund his campaign.
Well, before we move on, Ben, we talked earlier about the fact that the governor does at least seem to harbor some idea that he might want to be a candidate for president down the road, at least be considered for that. I know he was asked about that probably at every stop he made. How did he address it?
Yeah, he didn't really address it at all. He, you know, tried to put the focus on that he is focused on being the governor of Illinois. That's his number one priority, and that's going to be his priority should he win another term. But I think there was some slight acknowledgement of the reality that yes, he may be considering it. There was a few answers to questions where, you know, he would give his explanation about his interest in doing everything possible to help the state of Illinois. But then he would, you know, follow it up by saying, I'm going to, you know, make sure I'm working for Illinois no matter what decision I make in the future. So I think he's being a little bit more open about acknowledging that there is a lot of speculation about his future. I don't think he's made up his mind about if he's going to do this yet. But, you know, I think he's more open to acknowledging that this is something that is potentially on his mind, that a lot of people are talking about it. And, you know, as he gets asked about, you know, why he deserves another 4 years as Illinois governor, he is keeping in mind that, you know, it's certainly possible that he would only serve two more years as governor if he were somehow successful and won the presidency.
All right. Well, the speculation will continue on that. But earlier in the week, we were planning this show and we thought, well, the best thing to talk about may be the state budget, because the new fiscal year begins on Tuesday, July 1st. So we never really got a chance to, once the budget was put together and signed, we hadn't had a chance to really delve into things. So now we have had a chance to look closer at it. And I want both of you to weigh in. But Charlie, we'll go to you first on this. What do you think of this year's state budget? It seems to me like they cobbled something together here that may get the job done, assuming everything goes as planned. But they're still going to have problems down the road.
Yeah, and what struck me, and as I've mentioned on this show before, I've been watching the budget for, oh my gosh, longer than I care to admit, going back to the days of Richard B. Ogilvie. There's never been a budget that had as much uncertainty built into it as this particular budget. And that's because we don't know what's going to happen in Washington. And so the budget that was put together had a lot of, what would you say, a lot of unanswered questions. For example, one of the things that the budget contains, and this is something I don't think we've ever had before, there's a basically a fund of $100 million that Pritzker can use to cover any gaps left by unrealized federal funding. And it's I think Comptroller Susana Mendoza called it a safety valve, and it draws money from about 50 other funds that have unused balances in them. And so that's available to try and cover immediate shortfalls coming in terms of our federal aid. To back up for a moment, under the Constitution, you can appropriate money. In other words, you can say, we're going to give X amount of dollars to the State Board of Education for this purpose. But you can't then say, and here are the rules and regulations that they have to use. That has to be in a separate bill. And it's called a Budget Implementation Bill, or a BIM. And so some of the stuff was spelled out in the BIM. One of the things that's in there would allow the state treasurer to lend up to $2 billion to the comptroller to pay bills. The idea is to cover whatever anticipated shortfalls might be coming. Although some of the things that the federal government might do, Illinois would not be able to weather, would not be able to cover. For example, they're talking about the SNAP program, which is basically food stamps for low-income people, seniors, kids. If the feds, basically the Trump administration, succeeds in saying, okay, states, you have to pay the full tab, that would cost Illinois more than $1 billion, which we don't have, and we have no likelihood of being able to get anytime soon. So these problems are still out there. And of course, there's other things, just local things, like how do we pay for mass transit up in northeastern Illinois in particular? It's 700 and plus million dollar shortfall. That's an issue that's still hanging and has a certain sense of urgency. And if I'm not mistaken, at the same time that the governor was doing his statewide announcements, a bunch of transit supporters, unions and others, had a rally in Chicago urging the state that you have to deal with this issue sooner rather than later. You can't wait because it would be catastrophic cuts to transit services in Chicago and the suburbs if you don't arrange for the money to be available to cover the shortfall.
Ben, I think one of the things the governor likes to talk about is, we haven't had a general tax increase, but boy, there's been a lot of fees, and there's even talk of more of them possibly going up, maybe to pay for something like transit. But I want to get your overview of the budget overall. You followed this pretty closely, this whole process this year. So when somebody asks you, what about the budget, what do you say to them?
I think the important takeaway this year is that it's a budget to get us through this year. I'm not sure it really sets us up for, making any future years easier. I think in reality, it may make more hard decisions in the coming years, as this year lawmakers really resorted to kind of what they've been doing the last few years whenever they've needed a few more dollars in revenue. They do some targeted tax increases that don't necessarily impact too many consumers or too many humans directly. They go after some businesses that, in areas where they think they can squeeze more money out of them. And, there's always a growing demand for spending in state government. We're also not seeing anything in this world get any cheaper, really. So costs are continuing to rise. And, at some point, it's going to become very difficult to continue to find new, small, creative ways to raise enough revenue, especially if other funding sources decline through economic reasons or decisions made out of Washington. So I think, As Charlie was kind of summarizing there, lawmakers really did make a decision to pass a budget for this current fiscal year, and they'll continue to deal with other problems as they arise in future months and years.
And Ben, there was no appetite, I should make this clear, that I heard anything about, I don't know about you, for raising general taxes, like raising the sales tax, raising the income tax. I didn't hear anybody saying that.
No, not at all. And I think just about every lawmaker in this General Assembly is pretty adverse to doing that. There's still enough lawmakers out there who, for example, would want to raise more taxes on businesses or, establish the progressive income tax again. But, that's a smaller group, I think. And I'm not sure that the governor is very interested in doing either of those things at the moment either. So, yes, there is really no talk in Springfield at all at the moment of broad-based tax increases. In fact, Governor Pritzker outright said he would veto a budget this year if it came to him with something like that.
Yeah, Charlie, that gets to a point of somebody when they harbor these national ambitions to run, might be avoiding doing some things that some people say might be the best approach. Maybe if Pritzker threw his support behind some, like we know, the service tax idea, that idea has come up before, restructuring taxes. That has come up in the past. But if somebody's got these national ambitions, I'm not expecting something like that approach is going to get much traction with them. So I mean, just him being sort of in this political limbo right now of what he may do down the road probably makes any real change in Illinois unlikely. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, unless there's also something in there to kind of offset it. For example, you could say that, well, we're going to increase the sales taxes, or we'll go to a tax on services because most of our surrounding states tax more services than we do. And I've used this example before. We usually go up to Wisconsin for vacation, about 500 miles north of here. And we were up there, this was, oh, maybe 8, 10 years ago. I had problems with my car and I had to take it to an auto repair shop and get it fixed. And when I got the bill, the parts were relatively cheap and the labor was pretty expensive. And there was a service tax or sales tax on the labor. So it cost me quite a bit more than had I had it done down here where the labor is not subject to sales tax. Now, I could not drive the car 500 miles in the condition it was, so I happily paid the sales tax on the mechanic's time. But that would be an example. And what you could maybe do is do kind of a switch. Yeah, we're going to tax these services, but what we're going to do is we're also going to use some of that money to provide an offset for school funding so that the property tax that you pay on education would go down, that kind of thing. Or one of the things that Ralph Martire from the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability has suggested is that, and he's talked about we should expand the sales tax to services because, as he points out, our economy is heavily reliant on services and not so much on the tangible goods. So if you were to structure something where we raise taxes, but we do it in such a way that the average citizen doesn't get hit by it, that would be something that you could look at. Now, people would oppose it. They'd say, oh, yeah, you're raising taxes on everybody, which would not be true. But in this day and age, in terms of political campaigning and political advertising, truth is not always something that's taken into consideration.
Just a few seconds left here. And Ben, anything else that people should know about this year's budget?
Yeah, this year, I think one of the other things people should know is spending has grown pretty minimally. The budget itself is $2 billion more than last year's fiscal year 25 budget, but discretionary spending, according to the governor's office, is only up less than 1%. So lawmakers really put a lot of spending increases into required spending areas. There was not a lot of new programs created in this budget, as we've seen in other budgets. So I think, that is an example of where lawmakers have been trying to exercise some financial restraint in a tough budget year.
The Republicans are complaining that this is the largest budget in state history. Well, I would say you could say that virtually every year. Now, I didn't go back and look at all the years from like fiscal 1970 on. But my guess is virtually every year you wind up paying more. You increase education, for example. Inflation costs up drives up the cost of providing governmental services. You have pension payments that increase. So, yeah, they're always going to be larger than the year before. So I look at that as being kind of a phony argument.
All right. Let's go to our notes from the field. And, Ben, we'll start with you.
Yeah, it's kind of a budget-related note here. But one thing that we saw in Illinois' budget that did decrease this year was funding for soil and water conservation districts across the state. They received just $7.5 million of funding, including $4 million for administrative expenses. And the districts are saying that this is just not enough for us to continue to operate. It really only pays when you divide it up against almost 100 soil and water conservation districts in Illinois. That comes out to basically $40,000 for each district. And that's barely enough to pay a salary for, you know, just one administrative member of these. So they're saying that this is quite a problem. And one of the things that's important to note with this is we've seen a lot of dust storms in the headlines over the last few years. And these districts do play an important role in, you know, promoting good soil conservation practices, good farming practices that could help mitigate some of these dust storms. But, you know, state lawmakers have decided to reduce some funding over the last few years for these districts. At the same time, we saw a deadly crash south of Springfield from a dust storm back in 2023. And then, of course, one of the largest dust storms in state history back in May that reached all the way from Champaign to Chicago. So it's something I think worth keeping an eye on in future budget years.
Mm-hmm. And Charlie.
The governor recently signed legislation that makes changes to the Prisoner Review Board. And that occurred after the Prisoner Review Board released a guy who would go on to commit murder. And this new law gives victims the right to file impact statements ahead of hearings, provides them with additional notice when an offender is granted early release, and allows them to seek an order of protection against an offender who is incarcerated. And this came in response to a guy named Corsetti Brand, who was released from prison in 2023 after serving a sentence for domestic violence conviction. After his release, he began threatening his former partner, and he was sent back to prison for violating the conditions of his release. And his former partner filed for an order of protection, but a Cook County judge denied the order because he was behind bars. And then the Prison Review Board voted to release Brand, saying that there was no evidence to keep him behind bars. And the next day, he went to his former girlfriend's home, stabbed her and her son multiple times, and her son died trying to defend his mom. And so he's been found guilty of first-degree murder. But what this change would mean is that the woman could ask for an order of protection, and the judge couldn't say, well, he's behind bars. The judge could say, yes, you get your order of protection. If and when he's released, it's in effect. And it would also expand the terms of board members, and it would change qualifications, requiring 7 out of the 15 to have at least 5 years of experience as a law enforcement officer, a parole officer, a prosecutor, a criminal defense attorney, or as a judge.
That's all of our time for State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Ben Zielinski with Capital News Illinois. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.